Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the United Breweries Limited Q2 FY22 earnings conference call hosted by Investec Capital Services. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Harit Kapoor from Investec Capital Services. Thank you and over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Janice. On behalf of Investec Capital Services, I would like to welcome everybody onto this call. This is the Q2 earnings call for United Breweries. We'd like to welcome the management team from United Breweries onto this call. We have with us the senior management represented by Mr. Berend Odink, CFO, and Mr. P.A. Kunasha from Finance and Investor Relations. I'll hand over the call to Berend for opening remarks, post which we'll open the call for Q&A. So over to you, Berend.
Thank you, Harit, and good morning, everybody, on today's call. Thank you very much for joining. Today, we'll discuss the quarter two results of UBL. After the usual opening comments, Kunasha and I will be happy to take any questions. So let me first start with the results highlights of the second quarter. We posted a volume growth of 49% versus prior year, driven by strong recovery of demand prevalent across nearly all the markets. Volumes were up 23% versus the first quarter. If you compare to pre-COVID period of 2019, the quarter volumes were at 78%, with continued month-on-month recovery during the quarter. The September volumes were at 88% versus 2019 September. Because of strong EBITDA results at 170 crores, contributed by volume growth and the lower impact of COVID in the current year versus last year, and further costs. The EBITDA margin increased to 11.9%, up from 8.1% last year. We posted free operating cash flows of 227 crore year-to-date, up from 95 crore prior year. The company has a strong liquidity position with circa 600 crore bank balances. The company received a CCI order with the imposition of 752 crore as penalty. The company is in the process of preparing the grounds of appeal, and the appeal will be filed within the time frame of 2 months from the date of the order. And based on legal advice, the company believes that it has a strong case on merits for successful appeal on this matter. Accordingly, no provision is considered necessary. If we move to the next few slides, depicts the Q2 and year-to-date results. With Q2 net sales growth of 58% and strong EBITDA growth at 133%. Year-to-date EBITDA is 272 crore compared to last year, negative 21 crore. If we move to slide 5, it shows the volume performance for the key regions. Like last year and last quarter, the growth differs by region, by state, due to different impacts and timing of the second COVID-19 wave and differences in markets opening up both this year and prior year. The North posted good growth, particularly in UP and Rajasthan. Delhi is undergoing a policy change and as such going through a transition with at the moment low stocks in the market. West saw growth recovery in all markets. East posted highest growth also due to a lower base. South saw again growth recovery, but Telangana recovery is impacted by still higher taxation levels versus pre-COVID. On the net sales, it was up to 1,426 crore, driven by 49% volume and 9% favorable price mix. On page 8, it shows the EBITDA breakdown. Gross profit improvement driven by better volume performance. The GP margin down 52 basis points versus last year, but up 341 basis points versus Q1. With continued focus on cost management and the leverage effect of revenue growth coming through, both employee expenses and other expenses enabled margin expansion of respectively 280 basis points and 154 basis points. The resulting EBITDA margin for the quarter is 11.9%, up from 8.1% last year, and broadly equal to the pre-COVID Q2 quarter of 2019 of 12.3%, this despite the lower volumes compared to that quarter. Free operating cash flow were robust at 227 core, up 133 core versus last year. Working capital changes were 104 crore positive, and investment and interest cash out were both below prior year. Finally, turning to the slide on outlook and summary, UBS has observed progressive recovery of underlying consumer demand, both first and second COVID-19 waves. Although the trajectory and future impact of the pandemic remains uncertain, the company has adapted its operations accordingly and will continue to manage the business with agility. The company is optimistic about the long-term growth drivers of the industry on the basis of GDP growth, urbanization, and evolving consumer trends. We're well positioned to leverage and drive these opportunities with leading market position, portfolio brands, and healthy balance sheets. With that, I'd like to conclude the opening comments and let us move to the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Avnish Roy from Edelweiss. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks and congrats for the very good recovery. So you have given the YOY growth in different states. So that will look really good because of the base. My question is on a two-year basis, which states you are the most happy and which are the laggard states? And if you could share some outlook, I do understand Bengal and Rajasthan, the beer taxes were cut. It was made a bit more easier. So if you could comment on the outlook also.
Thank you for the question. Indeed, we see differences state by state. I think where we see full recovery or even higher volumes versus pre-COVID levels are a number of important states, like as you mentioned, UP, Rajasthan, West Bengal, but also Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, Goa, where we saw still some recovery to be done is in Delhi, due to, for example, the new policy that is introduced. In Telangana, as excise levels are higher, and also, for example, Maharashtra. And if we compare the numbers of recovery, so this 88%, we also compare to September 2019, where we have to recall that the state of Andhra had at that point in time a different policy, which was much more favorable to the beer industry. But from a bigger picture perspective, we see good month-on-month recovery, also very important, the role of the on-trade, where during the quarter we see progressive opening up. For example, in Canada, the on-trade opened only in September. We saw also a couple of states where limited opening hours were in place, for example, up to 10 p.m. in the evening. So all this will over time, I think, support further recovery beyond pre-COVID levels. As usual, we don't really give outlooks or guidance on that. But I think the trend hopefully indicates the direction the volumes are progressing.
Sure. One follow-up. So on the Delhi new policy, do you see Q3 any big impact negative and medium long-term? Would you say because of this policy, Delhi will be one of your highest growth states 2-3 years view?
I think we have to see exactly how the policy will pan out. I think there's still quite a bit of uncertainty on how it will be implemented. But from many of the elements, I would say it's a positive. It's much more about consumer choice, it's about removing some of the restrictions, about enabling longer opening hours, moving retail into private hands. So I think there are many positives, but it's too early to say whether this will be a large volume shift, let's say, in that market. Yes or no?
Sure, and last question on gross margins. You have kept it quite stable, which is a good achievement. Now, glass prices in the last one or two quarters has gone up. So if you could tell us how you have been impacted on that, and in terms of outlook both on glass and the liquid, how do you see next 1 year?
Yeah, I think overall the commodity markets in many areas, whether you talk about oil, energy, or other input costs like some of the glass input materials, things like carton, aluminium, we see very high spot markets at the moment, which is, I think, a challenge for many companies. With the current contracting position, for example, for next quarter, we do expect a kind of lower level of inflation as we have been guiding previous quarter. But definitely compared to spot rates that will over time, you know, as contracts expire or as price adjustment formulas kick in, that will be really a watch out area. On barley, we are having the current stocks from last year's crops still in hand, so that's all done in terms of procurement. But we have to move to next season. And of course, yeah, it's an agricultural crop, so it's really difficult to forecast what the pricing, the quality, the quantity will be. I think so far, kind of the rain and the acreages are looking okay. But in terms of pricing, we have to wait a bit to get further clarity on that.
So that's helpful. That's all from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Soman from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, so a couple of questions. Firstly, what would you say would be a normalized EBITDA margin for you? I mean, just assuming revenues are normal as things stand today. And secondly, in terms of the wheat beer launch, has it been launched in any more states? And any numbers you can share in terms of volumes or just in terms of response?
Thank you, Aditya, for the question. So first, on the EBITDA margin, we've always said first we need the volume to fully recover to enable the, I think, potential, say, the P&L. We don't give guidance on that, but you know, if you look at the past years, I think an important milestone is, again, get that volume back. Secondly, I think in this quarter, despite the lower volume, we posted the underlying EBITDA margins equal to 2 years ago. So I think that shows to some of the cost measures that we have taken, and once you get better volume flowing through, I think that should enable the margin expansion. On the wheat beer, we are having activities and market presence in some 8-9 states. There we continue to build the segment. We have very competitive shares in that segment, in some of the states leading shares. So we're happy with that consumer traction. But of course, I think it's just one signal and one proposition of a lot of development, particularly in the premium area, with new flavors, with new segments emerging, so that I think there will be much more activity and development in years to come.
I understand. Just a follow-up on the EBITDA margin. Obviously, compared with 2 years ago, the margins now seem to be sort of back where they were on lower margin, on lower volumes. But if I compare with sort of FY19 or even FY18, I think the volumes are still somewhat weaker if you compare it to FY18 or 19. I mean, I'm just trying to understand if once volumes go back to a normalized level, would 15% be a satisfactory margin for you, would a 13% be a satisfactory margin, or would it be 20%? I'm just trying to understand from where you would think of the margin as being open.
Yes, I think a couple of things that are very important for the margins. First, we continue with cost efficiency. So we always said that it's never done. We have taken a lot of measures during COVID. We are actually continuing to look at further efficiencies as we move on, particularly if we look at the commodity market at the moment. I think it only shows that we will need to take further steps. What I said earlier, the volume coming through first, hopefully we have now a period of less interruption in front of us, is very important. But I don't think we can say that a certain margin level we're kind of satisfied with that. What it is, will always be a dynamic of competitive position, market shares, and presence in key states. the commodity cycle as to where it is at a current point at a certain point in time. And finally, you know, the investment behind brands, existing but also innovations in terms of mid to long term competitive market position. So we cannot look at isolation and target one single number of the EBITDA margin. I think we have to see it as a component of competitive market share and some of the other cost items I mentioned, and then that will be an outcome.
Okay, I understand. I mean, just one last follow-up on this. I mean, in terms of that margin, then coming down from, say, 21% in 2019 to 17% to 2018, would that be a function of just, I mean, obviously one is your input cost structure and secondly the volumes, but would you also say that competitive intensity compared with them is, compared with that time, is significantly higher, or that's not that big of a part, or that's not that big a driver of margin at this point?
I think competitive intensity always is quite high. It will move over segments, it will move over states. So that, I think that is not structurally very different. I think what is, of course, for the industry is that you know, there's a lot of drive on the per capita consumption and driving the category penetration, and within that a lot of efforts on the premium side where, you know, you will see a lot of new brand launches and a lot of new segments coming up, and I think that will only increase for the years to come, and that will come with its investment, which, you know, in the short term will impact maybe margins, but overall I think from the mid to long term is very positive because it attracts new consumers to the category, drives a lot of value generation as well. So I think it's a very important phase for, let's say, the beer industry in India in terms of the development.
No, fair enough. Thank you. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arnab Mitra from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. My first question was on this 9% realization growth year on year. So if you could just help us understand how much of this is actual pricing, how much of this is mix, and do you expect realization growth to continue at this level, or there was some exceptionally big changes in the mix on a YOY basis given how disrupted the base was, which is why it is 9% and it may not continue at this level as you go ahead for the next few quarters?
Yeah, it's primarily driven by some of the pricing we have taken. That is not only of course current quarter, but also prior quarters where, you know, we'll just continue the roll on effect. So, you know, in terms of what is the outlook on that, you know, of course, some of the pricing will then be baked into the base figures. I will have to look next, you know, quarter at the new pricing, where the possibilities are, et cetera, where, you know, as we all know normally, this is more a period of kind of March, April, May, where most of the price revisions are done. But yeah, we can conclude that so far I think that pricing has been relatively robust.
And any sense of how much of this line is actual pricing versus being mixed? I mean, if you could give a ballpark split of this 9%?
Yeah, we don't really want to break that out, but I would say the majority has been on pricing.
Got it. And the second question then was that, you know, your volumes are back to 88% of pre-COVID in the September month. You know, what we have seen in even premium spirits is that volumes are much higher than pre-COVID. So going ahead, as would you say that the reopening now in terms of on-premise is kind of completely open, and therefore the gap should really converge now, given that there is no further restrictions in any state? Or do you think there are still some restrictions which affect beer a little bit more than the broader, you know, alcohol industry?
Well, I think in, for example, September, we saw the last couple of restrictions being lifted. I think normally it's, you expect a bit of time for consumers to kind of stabilize and you know, go back to their behaviors with the new opening hours, the restrictions being lifted. So as of that, I think that is all very positive. So we're optimistic about continued recovery from that perspective.
Sure. And one last question on barley. You mentioned that, I mean, now going ahead, it will depend on how the next crop is. So in terms of barley, is the domestic production the main driver of the price of barley, or is there a lot of interaction with the international barley prices, you know, in terms of how your own barley procurement price plays out?
I would say it's relatively domestic. Of course, there is some linkages and there is some opportunity for some of the imports. However, from a longer-term perspective, we also want to give a strong signal to barley growers that, yeah, this is a strategic crop that we would require to be continuously invested in. So we have an active program with contract farming, with support on trainings and feeds and varieties, etc. So we continue to pursue that, and yeah, unless there are real structural price differences or other considerations, our preference would be to buy domestically.
Okay, that's quite clear. Thanks for that. That's it from all of it.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Krishna Sambamurti from Motilal Oswal AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. What proportion of the volumes is coming from cans rather than bottles? And any issue there because of lack of availability of aluminium or higher prices?
No, the cans are specific to a certain number of markets for historical reasons. For example, mainly in the north, the preference of consumers is more towards cans, maybe bottles. The share of cans is around 15% in our portfolio. But there are no shortages of aluminium or any of the materials. I would say it's more the pricing, of course, where yeah, some of those commodity indices trade quite high at the moment. But then it's a combination of positions that we've hedged in the past and open positions that we'll need to hedge going forward. But there's no shortage, let's say, of cans itself.
Okay. Just to clarify, 15% is the can position.
Yes.
Thanks, sir. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Alok Shah from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thank you very much. My first question is on the ad spend. So would it be possible to give a ballpark as to ad spend versus the 2Q FY20 are back to what percentage now?
Could you repeat the question? The line was not very clear.
My question is the ad spend in the current quarter versus 2Q FY20 would be back at what percentage?
Yeah, so we have tailored the ad spend to the activity that we think is appropriate for the openness of the market. So it would not be at the level of 2 years ago. But as a percentage of the top line, I think you would say it's broadly equal. I think the mix of ad spend also has changed much more to digital, for example, also much more consumer facing, etc. So there has been some shifts in, of course, what is possible and how we best activate the brands and reach consumers. For example, 2 years ago, we probably had a bit more on sponsorships and any events. Now that is obviously not possible in today's environment. So that mix has changed, but broadly, as a percent of the top line, that would be similar.
Got it. And my second question is, in terms of your premium portfolio, so firstly, can you give us a ballpark number as to what's your share of premium portfolio volume to the overall volume? And secondly, in terms of manufacturing capacity, what would that percentage be? That's it from my side.
Yeah, the share of premium stands around the high mid-single digits in the portfolio. We've seen consistently quarter over quarter that continues to grow, of course, also in line with the overall market trends. And we continue to invest in the capabilities in the various breweries to produce more and more premium on the various breweries. So as such, there's not a shortage or any considerations, I would say, on the production side, that we continue to invest and enable the supply to the market for more and more breweries over time. So that program continues.
Got it. Thank you very much. Best of luck.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Punia from Nirmal Bang. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So I have two questions. Firstly, on in terms of getting a clarity on the realization comment that you mentioned for the earlier question. So when I see it from, when I compare the volumes with beer revenues, so there is a negative realization for the quarter compared to the positive that the earlier comment was made on. So what is that led by? And secondly, in terms of demand environment, during the quarter, obviously on-trade basically improved on a sequential basis. Was there any benefit in terms of inventory stocking by trade? If you can give us some sense on that front. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Let me start with the second question. On the inventory impact, I would say it's relatively small. I think the duration of the lockdown, of course, was this time around luckily a bit shorter, so a lot of the inventory actually got sold out. So I didn't think there's a great shift in stock decline or build-up. I recall that, for example, Delhi, where you know, the market is going through a policy change, and hence you know, those kind of events I think make a bigger impact than on-trade itself in the various states that have closed and subsequently opened up. On your first question, I didn't fully understand it in the sense that which figure have you been looking at when you say there's a negative realization?
Yeah, so basically I was hinting at beer sales growth versus beer volume growth of 49%, so 47% versus 49% volume growth. But at the top line level, I do understand that because of lower excise duty on a YY basis, the realization might look slightly higher. But when I just see from beer sales versus beer volumes, then the realization would be a negative 1.3%. So just wanted to get a sense on that front. Or am I looking at or in a wrong way?
Yeah, what we have highlighted is more on a net basis. So the growth revenues, deducting the excise, and then I think that is for us the most meaningful figure in the sense of how much do we realize after the duties and excise payments. So we compare that to prior year quarter two on the per case basis, that's up 9%.
Okay. Thank you. That's all from my side.
Reminder to the
participants, if you wish to ask
a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of
Ashish
Desai from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Darren. Hi. So, couple of questions. So, firstly, on staff cost, is this the normalized run rate that we will see, or are there some one-offs over here?
No, there are no one-offs in staff cost.
Okay. And secondly, could you share what is the ratio of returnable bottles versus new bottles this quarter, and has this come back to a normalized level? Because when you look at your realization improvement of 9% and 51-52% kind of a gross margin, it seems that the cost of materials per case is more or less still similar to Q1. So there is a high single digit kind of inflation that we get on a YOY basis.
Yes, the dynamics here are that on the one hand, I think the collections are becoming much better. On the other hand, as the volume picks up, we also need to invest to enable that volume growth. So with that, the injection or the use of new bottles is relatively above the traditional figures of around one-third. So that is, with the market recovery, et cetera, of course, an investment we think we should fully do. So that will take a bit of time to, let's say, normalize, but in itself, the collections and the returns are also progressing well.
Can you share what is the current ratio?
Well, I would tell you it's a little bit higher than normal, but again, this is more a temporary effect after the low volumes that we assumed in the last period of the new COVID wave. And again, that normally would stabilize again back when we hit that full recovery of markets, which of course is now close to underway with what we discussed earlier in the course.
Okay, and so the rise in cost of materials that we are seeing is largely on account of this fact.
Partly this kind of support for volume growth. We also see some pressure in other, for example, packaging materials like carton is up quite a bit. So yeah, from category to category, we'll see the different dynamics. But I think overall net-net, yeah, we've realized good improvement in gross margin versus prior quarter one.
Okay. And lastly, if you can share what has been the growth in premium volumes versus the overall 49% volume growth?
Now the growth in premium has almost been double versus the overall portfolio. So that's, of course, on the back of the on-trade opening up and a lot of normalization coming back. So again, quite a consistent trend on premium from what we've seen in the prior quarters and even the last few years.
Sorry, you said growth has been doubled, which is like 100% versus last year, which I'm assuming is a very low base.
Yes, we had a very low base last year, of course, because the opening up last year was much more staggered, much more delayed, state by state. And this year, around of the second wave, although we have some examples of states where on-trade was opened later due to specific circumstances, for example, in Kerala, but the far majority of states opened up.
I think it can't be 100% because the growth 49% is both mainstream and tourism. So it is much lesser than that. So it's an average, right? So you can't just say 49%.
Right. So if you can share what was the share pre-COVID and have we reached those levels or is it we surpassed those levels now?
No, in the ongoing recovery, we have not yet reached that full recovery, as you would also see in the total still doing.
Okay. Yeah, that's it from me. Thanks. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Harit Kapoor from Investec Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good morning team. Just have two questions. Firstly, you know, given the fact that you know, you've seen a strong recovery on the premium side as well, just wanted to know, you know, whether you would look to say, you know, now front end some of your innovation agenda in the premium space. You also discussed about, you know, there is going to be a lot of excitement there. So just wanted to get a sense from you, you know, last 18 months has been challenging, you know, in terms of, you know, lack of new launches, etc. So just wanted to, you know, understand from your end, you know, do you see a pipeline emerging, you know, from UBL's end in terms of new product launches, etc. And when, you know, if ballpark, can we see some of this in the market?
I think you're right in the sense that there's a lot of development still to come on the premium end. I think that's the good news of the trajectory of the beer market in India, that consumers are really moving up in terms of the product they prefer, the development of the various categories, and a lot of things happening on the premium end. So, yeah, within UBL, we're, of course, actively looking to drive that and further develop the premium market also with our own products that are existing and also, as you indicate, future innovations. But then we come back on that as, you know, as when we launch that and in what type of brands and formats at the right moment.
Yeah, just a follow-up to that was, you know, is the timing kind of, you know, as right as it ever was because, you know, you see some of the, you know, craft beer players also having had challenging times over the last 18 months given their smaller size and scale and the larger dependence on on-trade. So, you know, is the opportunity for a large incumbent like you maybe even better in the current context?
Yeah, I think there are always opportunities, but for example, if you look at our own portfolio, even the last few weeks, we were still stabilizing some of the drafts going into the market where, you know, that was quite disrupted. There were some policy challenges in a number of the states. So those are also a few of the things that, we need to make sure there's normalcy because we have a very strong leading share in the draft category. So those are a couple of the things that we, of course, first want to get right. But definitely, the opportunity on premium and what we discussed earlier on the consumer preferences is there, and we'll definitely continue to look at that opportunity and continue to activate that.
Understood. Second question was on the cost side. So, you know, over the last 18 months, you have taken several cost, rationalization measures to protect the P&L where the revenue wasn't so robust. Just wanted to get a sense from you on the overhead cost side. Now that the revenues start to recover to more or less normal levels going forward, what is the kind of cost-saving proportion, maybe as a percentage of sales, maybe 100, 150, 200 bps, on the overhead side that we could expect, given what you've done over the last, say, 12 to 18 months? While it would only be fully visible, once your, revenues come back to, to normal levels. So, in any way, if you could kind of quantify it or discuss, how much of that could we see going forward in terms of the actual savings, reflecting on the margins?
Yeah, I think I would just say that, we see our numbers, I will publish them every quarter. We also highlight any, bigger one-offs that might be in there to give you full visibility. But we are a bit careful to put really numbers on them, on what is savings, because we have a very, active project team on the savings with a pipeline, with realizations. We continue to do that. I think that's important. At the same time, we also choose to reinvest behind brands or behind commercial spend, or bring part of that to the bottom line, or some of it will be required just to offset inflation that is there from time to time. So that's how we look at our cost program. But in the end of the day, it should reflect in the numbers that we publish.
Understood. That's it from me. Janice, if you could ask some more questions, please.
Sure. Thank you very much. This is a reminder to all participants present in this conference. If you wish to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone telephone. The next question is from the line of Sunita Sachdev from UBS Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Baron. Thank you for taking the question. Now that we are aware of, the fallout of the price issue that we had, and we are going to be obviously submitting a proposal to the court. My question is more around how does this really affect your capacity expansion plans into the next couple of years? I'm assuming that once we get back to normal volume in the next couple of quarters, we will be needing to start thinking of growth. And where are we, I guess, on capacity utilization, and how do we think of the new breweries and capacity expansions on the back of this fund?
Thank you, Sunita, for the question. So, yeah, for now we have at full capacity because we invested before the peak season when the pandemic impact got known. So we first want to, of course, make sure we have a peak period where we really utilize that, or to a large extent. But it would be very positive if we again look at expansion, because then that means, of course, we see the future growth close to the realization. So I think we, for now, we guided that, yeah, on CapEx, we are on a trend line like 200 crores. Maybe after next season, we will dial that up when we see that growth coming through. But as of yet, I think it's a bit too early.
Could you share with any capacity utilization numbers?
No, I mean, that will really depend on our peak season in kind of the quarter one. So for the next quarter, if it's a kind of a normal unimpacted season, yeah, hopefully we're back to usual high rates of 80%, 90%. And then from there, we'll continue to look at where, in which state or in which sourcing area do we see the highest growth and the need to augment capacity in existing breweries. And that will be, I think, the first step of expansion.
So I guess I take away with you that in the next 2 to 3 years, we are not looking at a large greenfield expansion.
Yeah, I think the only thing you have to bear in mind, it will take anywhere between probably 18 months to two years or something to really implement and a sizable expansion. So of course we need to invest ahead of the curve, invest ahead of the growth. So that could happen after next peak season. Again, it will depend a little bit where will the growth happen. Is it really an unimpacted season? But that would say it's positive if we talk about CapEx for expansion, because that's of course the growth we like to pursue.
Sure. And if I may, any commentary that you can give around possible outcomes of the regulation change that we are going to see in West Bengal or Delhi? In Delhi, I know you mentioned a couple of things. West Bengal, does it affect us any differently?
Yeah, Delhi, I think, yeah, what I said earlier, it's early days how it will actually be implemented and done. I think the model looks a little bit like maybe Haryana to a certain extent. I think the positive, again, is very much that at the end of the day, it's consumer choice, and it's about, I guess, more freedom and more ease of doing business in the state. So with that, I think it's a progressive policy. But, I guess a lot of the devil is in the detail as to how it will be implemented and how the trade will look at it. So hopefully on the next call, we can maybe draw some early conclusions as to how is that going. But overall, on paper, I think it's a progressive policy. So let's see how that will be implemented and how it will be structured in our.
So, and even the West Bengal policy would be from your understanding?
Gotcha, West Bengal, you...
Sorry, I think this question, Sunita?
No, I was basically, Kevin gave us a lot of insight on the changes in regulation in Delhi and how it could make a difference to consumer choice and availability. My question was around West Bengal. What are the potential changes in the policy expected and whether it would potentially affect us? How would it potentially affect us?
West Bengal, the policy is, already the duty is down and we are seeing very good growth in West Bengal. And now they are looking at making spirits less expensive. But however, considering that beer is reasonably priced vis-a-vis what it was in the past, our expectation is we will continue to grow the way we are going now. Till the time we come to the pre-duty levels where the increase was such that the GP fit the MRP and the volume drop.
That's helpful. Thank you so much, Brandon.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference back to Mr. Harit Kapoor for closing comments.
Yeah, thank you, Janice. On behalf of Investor Capital Services, would like to thank the management of United Breweries for taking out time and giving us the opportunity to host this call. Would also like to thank all the participants on the call for taking up taking out time and attending this one. Would now like to hand over to Beren for closing comments. Over to you, Beren.
Yes, thank you, Hannah. Thank you, investors, for hosting us. Thank you to all the participants for your interest and questions. We look forward to connect next time. And in the meantime, if there are any other queries, we'll, of course, can be contacted and we look forward to engage. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of Investor Capital Services, that concludes this conference. Thank you all for joining. You may now disconnect your lines.